that no harm will come to her, neither by you nor any other member of this ship's crew." Alberta complained. "Stop talking about me as if I'm not here." Ignoring her, Doran said to the captain, "You are under orders to kill us both. You can kill me, but let her go free." "And what happens when Mr. Humphreys finds out I've let her go?" Doran smiled with the human side of his face. "Once I give you the coordinates, you will go to the asteroid and try to gain control of Humphreys through the alien artifact." Yuan glanced at Tamara, who nodded minutely. "If you succeed in getting the upper hand with Humphreys, then allowing Miss Apacheta to go free will be of no consequence. If you fail, we will all be killed." "Including you," said Yuan. "I will die one way or the other. That doesn't matter. The life of this woman does matter. Very much. To me." Moving beside him, Elverda said softly, "Dorn, I can't let you throw your life away. If you finish the work we started, if you find other bodies and give them decent death rites, then my life doesn't matter. It never did, except to cause agony and death. You can complete my atonement."
"Atonement?" Tamara blurted. "Is that what you're after?"
"Atonement," Doran repeated. Yuan said, "All right. Ms. Apacheta won't be harmed in any way. Now give the coordinates to my nav officer." Without another word, Doran turned and stepped to the navigation officer's console, then leaned over his shoulder and began pecking on his keyboard with both his hands. Turning to Tamara, Yuan commanded, "Notify Viking 2 and 3 to proceed to Ceres immediately." She arched an eyebrow. "You don't want them to go with us?" "No," he said. "Do you?" She thought it over for all of 2 seconds.
"No, you're right. We do this by ourselves."
Elverda, still standing next to the captain's chair, asked,
"What about our ship, the Hunter?"
"We don't need it now. Let it drift."
Falker whistled softly as he read Victor Zacharias's dossier from the computer screen built into the bulkhead at the foot of his bunk. He was sitting up with the pillows bunched behind his back. His quarters were small, but as sumptuous as he could make them, crammed with furniture and fixtures scavenged from salvaged vessels. A massive desk of actual teak filled one corner of the compartment, elephants and monkeys carved into its flanks and front. Colorful draperies hung from the overhead. The entire lavatory had been ripped out of a luxurious corporate torch ship and shoehorned into place, gold faucets and all. The rich, dark, faux leather recliner that had been rammed into the other corner of the compartment had been taken from a prospector's ship, the one luxury its late owner had possessed. Falker took all that for granted, including the fact that he had to maneuver carefully around his pilfered treasures to get across the jam-packed compartment. His attention was fully focused on Zacharias's dossier. The man had a family, wife and 2 teenagers, but they'd been lost after being attacked by the same monster who wiped out the original chrysalis habitat. "So what's he doing in a stolen ship this deep in the belt?" Falker asked himself. "Searching for his family?" Falker shook his head. "Can't be. It's 3 years and more since his family disappeared. They're dead by now. Have to be. Only a fool or a madman would still be searching for them. Only an idiot would steal a ship, make himself an outlaw with the rock rats, to go searching through this wilderness for his wife and kids. Only a fool or a madman," Falker repeated aloud, softly. "Why track after a madman? Even if you find him, you'll have to kill him. He won't give up that ship without a fight. And even if we do take the ship, once we bring it back to Ceres, its rightful owner will claim it. Well, it gets a reward, but that's peanuts compared to the price the ship would bring. Why bother? Let him go searching for his family. Let him die out there. Sooner or later, we'll run across his ship and take it. The message light beneath the display screen began to blink. Answer, Balker called out. His first mate's bearded face filled the screen. Contact, Captain. Looks like a derelict. Seems intact, but there's no beacon, no answer to our calls. Identification? Computer says its radar profile matches one of the ships in its files. Hunter. Some woman's listed as the owner, Elverda Apicheta. Sounds like some Latino to me. Balker nodded and swung his legs off the bunk, careful not to bang his shins against the big recliner. I'm coming to the bridge, he said. A derelict, Balker thought as he tugged on his soft boots. If she's really intact, she'll bring top dollar back at Ceres. He hurried to the bridge.
Attack ship Viking, 1 month later. By God, there it is, said Cao Yuan in a hushed, almost awed voice. From the navigation console, Coop wondered aloud, Are you sure? Yuan pointed to the main screen. How many rocks out here have six ships patrolling around them? Approaching vessel, identify yourself. The voice coming through the comm speaker sounded like a computerized synthesizer. It had taken a month for Yuan to track down asteroid 67-046. It hadn't been at the coordinates Dorn had given. Sure enough, Humphreys had moved the rock to a different orbit that swooped far below and then high above the ecliptic, out of the plane of the usual traffic through the belt. For an entire month, Viking followed trajectories that the navigation computer worked out, guesses based on the asteroid's original orbit, and the amount of energy it would take to move a rock of its mass. During those frustrating weeks of searching the dark emptiness, Yuan asked Tamara again and again, But what do we do when we find the roid? It's bound to be protected. Humphreys won't let it just sit there without guarding it. Again and again, Tamara would smile knowingly and say, Leave that to me. I'll get us past the guards. You'll get us killed, Yuan groused. He did not sleep with her anymore. He wanted to, but the realization that she'd been using him angered him too deeply. Instead, he crooked his fingers at one of the other crew members, a weapons specialist, young and slightly plump, but with silky dark hair and a willing smile. It's good to be the captain, Yuan told himself. But he was certain that Tamara was sleeping with Coop now. Approaching vessel, identify yourself. This area is proprietary to Humphreys Space Systems, Incorporated. No unauthorized vessels are permitted here. Yuan looked at Tamara, who pressed the transmit key on her console, and said crisply, This is HSS Vessel Viking. Authorization code Delta 469. One moment. Verifying authorization code. Tamara glanced over her shoulder at Yuan, a self-satisfied smile curving her lips. The main screen abruptly showed a square-jawed man with iron-gray hair cropped close to his skull. He wore a pale blue tunic with a high choker collar. I am Commander Hugh Ballestos, he said in a gravelly voice. Your authorization code is out of date. We've been on special duty in the belt, Tamara answered smoothly. We haven't updated our comm codes for several months. Commander Ballesto's stern expression did not change by a millimeter. I've had no word from headquarters to expect you. As I told you, we're on special duty. My name is Tamara Vyshinsky. Check your personnel files. Ballesto's eyes shifted away for a moment, widened noticeably, then returned to his main screen. Says here you report personally to Mr. Humphreys himself. Yes, I do, said Tamara. May I come aboard your vessel, please, Commander? Certainly, Ms. Vyshinsky. Of course.
Falker approached Hunter cautiously. The vessel certainly looked abandoned. No tracking beacon, no telemetry signals, no reply to his repeated calls. Elverda Apicheta, he had discovered from a computer search, was a famous sculptress, but very old. She had bought Hunter on a whim, apparently, and disappeared into the depths of the asteroid belt several years ago.